Okay, he can hear me. I'm still not hearing him over the PA. Hold on just a second, Professor. Yeah, we're not getting... Professor, can you give us a check there to see if we're getting audio through our PA? Yeah, we're still not getting PA. I'm getting lots and lots of hiss over the PA. Sounding like massive feedback attack is imminent. Our extraordinary level of organization is just astounding. But it's because we get paid so much for this, you know. Bear with us, folks. This hopefully won't take too long. We had this working last night, so we'll see what happens. This is going to be very cool if it does work. Fair enough. You got to find some stones first. I guess chairs will suffice. Cool. I think we're going to actually try to do something. It's called a cluster something. Yeah. Again, another technical term. Yeah, I'm real uncomfortable with this hiss stuff that we got going. Yeah.
Hello.
Fear.
Hello.
Yeah.
Uh oh, this doesn't sound so hot.
Yeah, turn it down before we get in that. Please. Thanks. Get a mic. Get the mic cord over there. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a mic.
All right.
Hello?
Hello?
All right.
Excellent. Professor Mann, we want to give you, can you give us a mic test real quick?
Hello.
Don't hang up on him, please. Excellent. We were able to hear you there. Cool. Excellent. Let's hear it for Goon Ingenuity. All right. Okay. First of all, I want to find out if Professor Mann, do you have anything, some words that you want to say and start off with? I guess you're going to be giving a lecture, or do you just want to go straight into taking questions?
I'm going to just give a lecture about. I'm going to give a sort of lecture to myself, and instead of seeing me, you're going to be being me.
Okay, great. And just an FYI, it looks like we've got the video here is frozen. So is that something on your end, or is that us? We have like a freeze frame here of you holding.
Should be getting 6 or 7 frames a second.
Okay, just a moment then. Let's try and solve that. Bear with us for just one moment, Professor. I heard of something called mediated reality as a buzzword in the media. Do you know anything about that, or is that what you're involved with?
Mediated reality is something that's implemented with the ITAP camera. Mediated reality means using the computer to alter the perception of reality.
I see. And what do you mean when you say alter the perception of reality?
Well, the ITAP device absorbs light that would otherwise enter an eye of the wearer and modifies that light and then reconstructs that light to pass into the wearer's eye. So a simple example of mediated reality is when you're walking around, somebody wants to communicate with you. One way they can communicate is by altering your reality. For example, by putting a note on something, so you're walking along and you see a sort of message that is, or you might see, you go to the grocery store and you see the milk glowing to remind you to buy it, or you're talking to the used car salesman and, you know, your wife at home maybe makes his nose grow long when she thinks he's lying.
Excellent. What if your wife's on acid at the time? Then what happens?
Well, you might have some problems there, but I think the general idea of mediated reality is to change the perception of reality. So it's a little bit different than virtual reality or video games in the sense that you still see as a baseline what is actually in the real world, and then you see that a modified version of that.
Excellent. Again, I guess we're still trying to reestablish the video feed, and what I'd like to do, even though we would save this till the end, I was just going to take a few questions from some of the people in the crowd here. Do you have and allow you to answer those, and then once we get the video feed going, we'll let them see what we're talking about here. So let me see. How about you up front here? What type of irresponsible uses do you see for this type of technology, Professor?
I think like advertising, that type of thing. One of the things that I'm trying to do is design filters to filter out advertising so that when you're walking around, you can filter out real-world spam. You know, already we have spam in the real world, such as billboards and things like that. So what I envision is that the mediated reality can be used to filter out the spam.
Excellent. Did you catch that, Professor?
No, I didn't hear that.
He asked, is the eye piece that you were speaking about, is that an implant? Is that an intrusive type of technology, or is it something that you simply wear?
The current embodiments of ITAP technology, many of them are non-invasive, so that it's not necessary to modify the body in order to obtain an ITAP.
I see. Let me take another question here. Anybody? Come on. Yeah, the question was, can you describe any existing types of this technology that are intrusive or invasive, I guess, as you put it?
I guess it depends on how how invasive, whether things like electrodes and connections and things like that versus totally surface phenomenon. The most useful technology I believe now is something that is totally a surface phenomenon, so that it doesn't have to involve any solid connection to the body that might be disruptive.
I see. What else have we got out there? Anybody? This guy over here.
Yeah, the problem that I've always experienced when trying these things out is that it's interpreting the light. If it's actually taking light and resourcing it, there's like a 10 to 15 millisecond delay, so you turn your head and it takes reality 10 to 15 milliseconds to see experience.
Did you catch that, Professor?
Yeah, I guess there's the delay problem, and that's one of the reasons. The early embodiments of the reality mediator, I did the processing off body, so I had I climbed up on the roof of the tallest building in the city and put the antennas there, and then I had a microwave downlink to the roof of the building that I was in, and then I ran it out from there into various computers, one of which was an SGI reality engine and several other processors, so that it could keep up with the processing rate. A big problem is processing rate and keeping up with the processing rate. So the other approach we're taking now is to build a Beowulf cluster with 64 processors in a kind of a sort of clothing-based thing with 64 computers on it that you can wear underneath a shirt or something like that.
A wearable supercomputer?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. No, ordinarily, in my old rigs, I would be wearing 8 or 9 computers and fairly fast video processing engines. But I think the Beowulf cluster will be the right approach to getting enough compute power to really make the delay tolerable.
Okay. Let me take somebody in the back here. There's a guy back here. The guy in the white shirt. The question was, can you describe the hardware you're wearing at the moment?
The hardware I'm wearing is a special purpose video processing engine, and then the host, the front end for it, is a Linux-based computer, something running the Linux operating system, and communicating out of 100 base T tulip chip with the processing engine.
Just a moment before we continue. Just another update. Apparently, the guess is that somebody must have really wanted to see Jericho's talk because we're being smurfed from the outside. The DOS attack is coming from outside. So, yeah, it's a bummer. And unfortunately, we have some people with pretty juvenile attitudes, so that's what we're dealing with. So what we're going to do is, I guess, continue the Q&A until we can try to establish something, and or until the DOS stops, and we're just going to keep working with it, so bear with us. There's a person in front who had one. You?
Yeah, are there any special problems with the glass mirror and reflective glass?
She said, what kind of specific problems? Anything? The question was, do you have problems with glass, mirrors, or other reflective surfaces?
Not particularly. The processing engine just processes the light that comes in, so mirror-like surfaces haven't particularly been a problem.
I see. Got a gentleman in a blue shirt. The question was, what type of processors, and do you have a web page?
Yeah, the processors are described on the wearcam.org site, wearcam.org, which describes the kind of computers that are used. So there's a variety of different processors. The host is typically a Pentium-type processor. Some of the other ones, I'm using a StrongARM 1100 as the host processor because that's got enough power to run Linux and XF86.
Cool. Can you repeat the URL? We've got some people with some pens that are trying to get it written down.
Actually, when you get the video feed, I can show you. Is there a Linux box there or something that can pick this up? Because it was showing up earlier, I think, on a variety of Linux-based PCs or NetBSD or just some kind of normal Unix box.
Yeah, we do have several boxes here. The problem is that we're getting a denial of service attack on our router upstream from us, and so we're not able to pass any traffic. And so that's what we're dealing with. We've only got internal connectivity at the moment. Let me take a couple more questions. The question was, what about using this equipment in a telepresence environment?
Well, in many ways, this is telepresence.
Okay. Next. The question was, when do you see this as a mass market commodity type of technology?
I think it's going to take a few years to mass produce this apparatus. So I see it maybe as a few years off before it becomes a commodity technology.
Okay. You back here. The question was, what is the status of PTP, the protocol you were using to transfer the images?
PTP is something that we're working on now, picture transfer protocol. So there's a good chance we may end up deciding to run that over IPv6, or we might, we're looking also doing some embodiments of UDP and so on. We have a working embodiment of PTP. And so we're just experimenting on further developing the protocol and also the whole notion of sending most update images. So you understand with video, if a packet is lost, then there is no sense gets behind. So what I suggested was that each packet be a picture, one packet be one picture, and select the degree of JPEG compression that would make that possible. So rather than using an MPEG stream, say, that would require previous or next images, the idea is to have each packet be one frame of video, and then if and when a packet is lost, then rather than asking for a resend, we simply get the next image that's most up to date, because the underlying assumption is that the camera or the device, especially ITAP, can pull out, you know, 100 frames a second out of an eye of the wearer, and maybe you can only send 10 frames a second. So if one of those is lost, there'll be invariably a newer image that wants to be sent.
Great. I got a question from you guy in the back here. No? Okay. Who else? You. The question was, does the ITAP track your eye movements?
Some embodiments of it involve an eye tracker, but not necessarily. So that's a separate feature that can be included or doesn't need to be included. I wrote in Linux Journal early this month, this year in the March issue of Linux Journal, I described the Reality Window Manager and how the window manager can be made to work based on gaze patterns. So you look at windows in order to select them.
Apparently we've got some connectivity, so we're going to try to restore your feed as soon as we can. I'm going to take a few more questions here in the middle. What is the frame rate that you see, Professor?
The frame rate that I internally get is adjustable. I can choose to get a full frame rate on the order of 60 frames per second, or I can also select a frame rate. What I often do is I remotely log in to another computer and then set it back to me so that I can see a frame rate that would be typical of a computer somewhere else. So a lot of times if I'm giving a lecture, say in the UK somewhere, I'll remotely log into their computer and then bring it back so that I get a kind of delayed experience, so that that enters into the feedback loop of how I give the presentation.
Okay, you right here. The question was how much weight and how does this affect your range of movement, the equipment that you wear?
The major effect is, well, like the equipment is much lighter now, and 20 years ago it was a very heavy apparatus back in the 1970s. Weighing some rigs, weighing as much as I did, and now it's quite a bit lighter over the years. So I've built a number of them of different weights. I've built more than 100 different units and of very different weights. So some of them are quite lightweight and have lesser capabilities. A large Beowulf cluster, of course, you expect that to be heavier than, say, a simple video processing engine with a single computer as its host front end.
You in the KMFDM shirt here. Did you catch that, Professor? Just a second. Professor, did you get that question?
No.
The question was, can you sort of enhance your senses, your vision, because you're mediating it, do things like binoculars or some kind of digital enhancement of your vision?
A couple of attributes of the current system. One is that I can see in total darkness because of the infrared capability of the ITAP. Another interesting effect, of course, is that you see a lot of things that are happening over a broad band of frequencies, such as the elevator doors have all these sensors in them, and you can see where all those lights are, and I could read the numbers on the chips that were on the elevator door at the side. So I would often, at first when I was wearing the ITAP, I would often look at the open elevator door and be reading the numbers on the chips and commenting on the resistor values, and other people would say, what are you talking about? I don't see anything. And then I took off my glasses and I realized I couldn't see anything except a black strip of plastic running down the side of the elevator, and I was seeing right through it. because this was the device that was sensing whether or not the door was blocked, and there was some 42 LEDs and various circuit board running the whole length there. So you see a lot of things like that. The other thing, of course, is the Edgertonian vision that I would typically see. For example, the number of bolts on a wheel that, of a car that was going at 60 miles an hour, I could still count the bolts on the bolt circle and read the writing on the tires because of the sort of Edgertonian effect that the ICAP can impart.
Very cool. I got this guy promises you he had a question here. Is there an implementation of your window manager that you spoke of earlier?
There are some prototypes of the video orbits. So, for example, now the video orbits is available on the wearcam.org site. The video orbits is the... Oh.
We just got... Professor, we just got your feed. We're getting your feed, and we're queuing down the lights. So we're seeing what you're seeing.
Oh, excellent. What sort of frame rate are you getting?
It looks like about 3 to 4 frames a second, or maybe, yeah, about between 2 and 4 frames a second,
so
sometimes
it's a
faster.
Bit slow now, I guess, is it?
Yeah, well, it's bursty. It's bursting sometimes, and then sometimes it's slowing down. I guess it probably depends on what kind of traffic we have out in the other room.
So what do you see now?
We see a hallway.
Good, good. All right, so this is the hallway at the University of Toronto, and then this is the section of the lab that I'm in here, so I'll just give you a little tour. We have a little area out here with chairs, tables and chairs, where people can wait, and there is some various brochures here, some of them that there's some brochures. Can you see what do you see now?
Windows NT. I guess you guessed.
And,
yeah. We love you. We love you, Professor. You definitely got in everyone's cool book, I think.
And what we have is this series of papers and brochures, and there's speed the recycling bin here because we got too much junk lying around, so I'll just put that in my recycling bin here to do some good for some cause here. So this is my office, and I've got here on my door, I've got this image, some examples of pictures that I've taken, transmitted with ICAP. And the title of my talk here is, let's see if you can see that. Can you read this?
Yeah, DEF CON 7 to do headset extras, yeah, extension, 12 volt or higher extension, yeah, personal cybernetics.
The title of my talk is personal cybernetics, and that's what I'm talking about here. And personal cybernetics is this notion of personal cybernetic technology, the combination of the Wearcomp invention and the ICAP video camera. These two devices, when combined together, give you what I refer to as personal cybernetics. And personal cybernetics provides a kind of framework for like a personal extension of the mind and body. And the apparatus of the invention has evolved somewhat. This is a picture of one of the early sort of versions from years ago, a very cumbersome sort of ICAP type or an eye connecting type device that involves a cathode ray tube. And throughout some degree of time error, there's some of these other ones involving cathode ray tubes, until more recently what I have is this kind of eyeglass-based device with everything inside the glasses so that it just looks like ordinary eyeglasses and yet continues to provide an output of at least one eye of the wearer. So how how is my video feed coming through?
It's looking excellent. I mean, it's the frame rate is, like I say, it's still between probably 2 and 5 frames a second, but it's pretty clear, and we've got a really nice projector here that's giving us a pretty good view. We had some questions or some requests that you, at some point, if you could stand in front of a mirror so that we can see what you look like, if it's possible.
Yeah, I guess I could do that. I've got some optics here in my lab, in my office. I've got a first surface mirror here, so you can probably see. This is I'm wearing now one of my older embodiment of my apparatus. Whereas I'll get a larger beam splitter. This is a big beam splitter that I've got here, and you can actually see through the beam splitter. But if I hold it around this way, it'll function sort of like a mirror, and you can kind of see. So this is can you see that?
Yeah, very clearly, and it's very, very cool. Yeah, we see it perfectly.
So I use those beam splitters for making different optical systems. So that's I put a piece of glass into a bell jar and pump all the air out of the glass, and I have some electricity running through a piece of aluminum wire inside the glass, and deposit a thin layer of aluminum, and then that makes a beam splitter. And of course, the beam splitter functions like a partial mirror that reflects light as long as there's nothing coming from the other side. So you've probably noticed that in some sense I am a camera. I am a document camera. So in many ways people often make presentations by using a document camera. In this case, I am a document camera in the sense that the ITAP is taking my right eye and giving that effect as being a document camera. And I could also say that eye is a document camera. The eye itself is functioning as a document camera, and that's the general philosophy or framework of this notion. Now, earlier a couple of people asked about what are some of the evils or dark side of the technology, and I guess maybe I should address that right away, because one of the problems is, what happens if this technology gets viruses? So what happens if the operating system based around this technology happens to be a virus of some kind, an operating system that is a virus, or an operating system that contains viruses? And I define a virus as a viral operating system as one for which there isn't full disclosure of its underlying principles of operation. So what I define on my web page is this notion of completely open source headers, engineering, and research. And I say, is the software kosher? In other words, is it completely disclosed, kosher versus viral, and viral in the broad sense of something that doesn't come with a full disclosure? And you can well imagine what would happen if you had a machine around your body which wasn't fully disclosed and open to peer review and so on, and some of the problems that might arise with that, for example, advertising and spam and everything, spamming your real-world body and so on. So there's some concepts there that are important. So can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we're hearing you pretty well. Are you? So there, occasionally you're getting some applause here, and then you sort of cut out. But overall, you're coming through pretty clear.
Good, good. So the other application that I'm looking at is filtering out spam in the real world. One of the problems that I noticed is that we've heard a lot lately about spam in email and getting spammed, but we've been spammed for years. We've been spammed by billboards and advertisements that are foisted upon us without our permission or consent, and we get spammed continuously with all this unwanted and unsolicited material. You're walking down the street and you see a big billboard, that's spam. So what I've been looking at is ways to filter out spam. Now, mainly spam the urinal, and it's located in a place that's rather hard to ignore. The spam is difficult to ignore when it's located there. So this figure depicts the spam located here, and I've got my eyeglasses here. These are my newer glasses. People may have seen the newer ones, which look just like ordinary glasses, but they have this filtering out capability because of the dark glasses. This is what the spam looks like. This spam is located right here. It was in this building on the second floor for a little while. And what I've got here is, you can see there is the urinal here, and directly above it there is this picture of this woman wearing nothing but a bra, and what you have is this condom stuffed under one cup of the bra, which gives us a picture that may be distracting to the particular task at hand. The spam here has a caption under it pertaining to the word pleasure, and this is the company logo here and so on that we see within that spam. And so the way that the spam is dealt with is that the eyeglasses build an environment map which collects all the images together and makes this mathematical analysis using the Reality Window Manager. RWM is built upon this notion called video orbits. And video orbits is based on projective coordinate transformations in algebraic geometry. And video orbits assembles these images into this composite so that as I'm looking around, they're joined together. And you can see here that the spam is here, and the entire scene has been pieced together mathematically. Now, once it's in that mathematical form, then the spam can be replaced with other material. So here is the image where the spam has been filtered out. So what I've done here is replaced the spam with this waterfall image, which is much more conducive to the task at hand. So this device is something that I call a visual filter. And the visual filter filters out spam by virtue of a kill file. So if you would like to get rid of something, you press Control K to enter that into your kill file, and it pushes it onto the kill stack. Now, because the cyborg community is a connected community, you can well envision a shared notion of kill files so that you get these kill files. Now, I don't recognize advertisement automatically. Instead, what has to happen is you have to be offended at least once to put it into your kill file, but then at least you're not getting it again. So this application, Visual Filter and Reality Window Manager, is defined in one of my favorite journals here called the Linux Journal. And this is the version of the Linux Journal describing in March of 1999 a second part of a two-part series entitled The Mediated Reality and the University of Toronto RWM Project. And RWM is the Reality Window Manager, and that basically is the essence of sort of computer space that is described there. And RWM is based on a framework that is the GNU plus Linux, which I call GNUX, which is a sort of abbreviation of GNU plus Linux, sort of in honor of Richard Stallman, who was the pioneer of what we know as the free software movement. And we're looking at a kind of software that is freely distributable, and sort of preferring that over some of the other possibilities that could be run. So RWM is based on the GNUX framework, the GNU Linux, particularly the Debian distribution, because that's the least viral. There is, of course, Red Hat, which is pretty good. Red Hat, at least they put all the viruses on a separate disk so that you can put it in your microwave oven. The Debian, of course, doesn't come with any viruses at all. So that's what I would call the most pure form of the non-viral operating system. And that's, therefore, what we selected the Debian version for this particular project. There's some aspects of the project. One aspect is called Shooting Back. And this Shooting Back project involves wearing the apparatus of the invention in various department stores and gambling casinos and banks and places like that where photography is strictly prohibited, yet surveillance is used extensively. And these are the environments which, according to the Davies definition, satisfy the definition of totalitarian regime. A totalitarian regime is a regime that would like to know as much about everyone, but reveal nothing about itself. So next time you're in a department store where there are surveillance cameras, take a few pictures of those surveillance cameras, and what you'll find is that models will come running out very quickly to be photographed. The models are wearing special uniforms, usually a blue uniform with stripes of some kind down the leg and so on, and they often wear these metal badges with numbers on them, and they have the word security written on them to tell us that they're models for purposes of photographing. And so this Shooting Back project involves collecting these images of surveillance cameras and so on. Here's another image that you can see how the Reality Window Manager, RWM, works in conjunction with Video Orbits. You can see here there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pictures that were taken in rapid succession from my right eye. Tapped out, and those pictures are then joined together in this contextualization framework showing the photoquantographic image composite. Over here, we have the same. Here I am using this payphone, so you can see from my point of view, from inside my eye, you're looking out at this payphone, and you see the gaze pattern that I took as I looked around. So these capture very much the gaze pattern. Here is another example of a Video Orbits gaze pattern. Here I'm talking to the department store representative, and I look up here towards the ceiling, and I look around this way, and it captures the surveillance infrastructure on the ceiling, and it's part of the Shooting Back project. The other project that we're researching here is a project called Please Wait. Please Wait is a project that involves a head-mounted display that covers completely the face of the wearer. Can everybody see that?
Yeah,
we're able to see that.
So I have here a head-mounted display that covers the wearer's eyes and ears so that I can't hear anything or see anything until there is some interaction. There's a keypad here, and there's a card reader with a slot on it, and this is the camera here, and it's integrated into a larger system. I have here a front view of the apparatus of this invention, and there is a short antenna for transmitting video, and there is a long antenna for receiving video, and there is also this antenna sticking out of the backpack, which contains the computer, and we're running TCP/IP over the radio and sending data back and forth and so on. So what we have here is this keypad, and there's a little set of instructions underneath the keypad here, and this is a set of instructions on how to use me. What we have here is basically written instructions on how to use me, and what we have written on that set of instructions is if I can find that here. I've written out that set of instructions on how to use the apparatus and how to interact. And the, if I can find it here, pull out another copy from my archives. I've got a bunch of copies of it up here. It's called Please Wait. And the piece is called Please Wait. And I should have it up here in my files. Mystic Intelligence. Just going through. Oh, there's a copy of Please Wait. So this is a set of instructions on how to use the apparatus. And it says, I do not talk to strangers. That's what's written on this placard that's mounted onto my face, so that when I walk into a department store, the security guard can read the placard and learn the instructions on how to use me. It says, I do not talk to strangers. Therefore, you must slide a government-issued ID card through the slot on my head if you would like to talk to me. These safety glasses prevent me from seeing or hearing you until you identify yourself. Until you provide positive ID, the camera and microphones on my head will not be connected to my head-mounted display set. So this is kind of in keeping with what my mother always told me, which was never to talk to strangers. And of course, department store security guards are strangers, department store managers are strangers, there's many, many strangers around. So then the instructions go on to say, your time is very important to me, so please wait for my next available moment. And then there is provided a set of instructions on how to use the number keypad mounted to my head-worn display set. And it says, if you would like to try to sell me a new product, press 1. If you would like to ask me to fill out a form, press 2. And then it says, if you would like to show me an advertisement, press 3 and slide your credit card through the slot on my head to purchase my account. Now lastly, the instructions on my head say, for quality control and training purposes, this conversation may be recorded or monitored. And finally, if you would like to inform me that photography is not permitted on your premises, press 9 and wait for my next available moment. That piece entitled Please Wait appears on the wherecam.org website, and the URL, I'll just write that down in larger letters because the frame rate, so that is at wearcam.org. That's the website, and the piece is entitled Please Wait. Please wait. So there is a variety of other research projects that I'm involved with here. We're designing a non-viral operating system, and we're designing a community of cyborgs out in the hall here. This is a picture showing my class. So you can see each member of my class is wearing an apparatus of this invention. So during the beginning of the class, I teach them how to build the ICAPs and how to make these systems. And then by the end of the class, they're building the ICAPs, and then we play a little game called Flash Gun Quake. Flash Gun Quake is a game that's played with real flash guns, and you run around and try to take pictures. So the flash gun becomes like the gun, and you shoot, and it sort of brings to life the shooting metaphor. And here's reality is altered, so we all experience this common altered perception of reality, such as here, Convocation Hall, and then the next round is played with a different interpretation of reality, and then a third session is done with yet another interpretation of reality, and each of these persist. So anybody walking by, just looking at us, just sees a bunch of cyborgs popping flash guns of white light, but they don't persist in their eyes. But for all of us who are wearing the glasses, we get this altered perception of reality that we're in. The altered perception of reality persists. So that's one project. Another project is National Accountability Day. That takes place every year on December the 24th. And on National Accountability Day, we get a large number of people to take ordinary cameras out to ordinary department stores and photograph ordinary representatives of the very ordinary surveillance superhighway. Now, the notion of National Accountability Day is very much based on the idea that, you see, the department store managers tell us that the cameras are there for our own protection. They're there to keep the prices down. So then we have to explain to the clerks and the managers and so on that the purpose of our cameras for National Accountability Day is to keep their wages up. Now that requires a little bit of explanation because the cameras that keep the prices down do so by virtue of the fact that they prevent shoplifting, and our cameras that keep the wages up do so by preventing credit card fraud. You see, any department store representative who sees our credit card, our company credit card, is photographed, and that way they could be identified in case there's fraud, and because we prevent the credit card fraud, then the credit card companies don't need to charge such a large margin, because now they charge, what, 3 or 4% of every transaction. We can keep that figure down. That means the stores make more profit, which means that they get more wages. So we have provided a variety of projects, included a personal safety device, the safety glasses that reduce crime, you know, the kinds of glasses that cut crime. Here's an example of safety glasses for reducing crime. And I don't know if you can see the safety glasses here that reduce crime. And the wearer of these glasses, there's this connecting cable that goes down inside the shirt and connects to the Beowulf cluster or the like, and gives a facility for crime reduction. So, are there any sort of questions about some of these ideas?
Okay, just a second, Professor. I'm going to get the lights keyed up. We've got a number of questions, and I'm going to get the lights keyed up a little bit so I can see. That's enough. That's enough. We still want to be able to see your display here. Okay, where should I start here? Who have I not called on? You.
Batteries and charging. How does he handle all that for all these clusters he's got running?
What do you do for power, Professor?
Well, I'm working with some various companies of batteries. I've got a company in France that makes the cells for me, and then I have a systems integrator in the U.S. that brings them into configurations, series parallel combinations, and distribute it around the body. And so it's a big research area to keep a large number of computers operational all the time, because I like uptimes typically of 16 hours a day rather than the 2 hours a day that you get from an ordinary laptop.
Let me let a couple other people ask some questions. Let's see. You haven't asked me. Is there any kind of physiological repercussion of wearing your equipment?
I've been sort of developing this for about 20 years now, and there were some problems that I had with some of the earlier units, but lately I've come up with some innovations that allow an ITAP to function without doing damage. ITAP is a lot different than a display. Display devices do result in eye damage and eye strain. So, for example, if you take a traditional wearable computer type displays, like a wearable TV, type display. Like you see that there are existing head-mounted displays that you can buy on the market, and those do have adverse effects, I find. And so a main reason for doing ITAP technology is to avoid some of the problems that arise with head-mounted display technology.
Excellent. Professor, we've got time for about four more questions, so I'm gonna take four more, and we've got another speaker coming on, even though I don't want to. let's see. You in the KMFDM, you had your hand up.
For being on the cutting edge of technology, you sure use a lot of paper. Why don't you send digital versions of your documents to instead of printing them out and looking at
them? He said, did you catch that, Professor?
I heard a little bit of it.
He was wondering why aren't you using more digital media to communicate your ideas rather than scribbling on paper?
I guess because I'm a Luddite. You see, I don't like a lot of modern technology. I think we're moving into a very unhumanizing world where technology is dehumanizing us in so many ways. You know, things like surveillance cameras and computers everywhere, and ubiquitous computing and ubiquitous surveillance. I'm really trying to call into question some of this technology. So you might say that I'm trying to tame the monster with a little piece of itself. And I'm really trying to get back to basics. I really like the tactile feel of paper, and I like the pen, the way it slides across the paper, and I like using chalkboards, and I like the way the chalk feels on the chalkboard and the tactility of it and the dust and the reality of it. I love reality. And in many ways, when one uses VGA as an output medium in the traditional sense of sort of PowerPoint running on top of virus of some kind, you're losing touch in many ways with the sort of beauty of the real world.
Just a second, Professor. Speaking of viruses, I've got a virus scan covering your feed, so just a moment, I'm going to rectify that and take two more questions. Yeah, the Mac has lost all touch with reality, so... it's not coming back. We're catching like a fourth of your feed. We've got a window covering your feed, so I'm going to get two more questions, and then we're going to have to wind down. Just a moment. I've already taken some of your questions. If somebody who has any, ask them, you. That question's already been asked. You. That's a good question. What are the costs involved in, for example, what you have on, or what can you tell us about the cost of your projects?
Initially, the cost is very, very, very high. So building the first prototype cost a tremendous amount. So there is a great deal of cost involved. However, my hope is to, in terms of manufacturing, to be able to get the manufacturing costs down. And I'm looking at getting my invention manufactured in a large scale at a low cost, so that people will be able to afford this, because it will be no good if only the bigs can afford it. That is to say, if only large organizations and the military industrial can afford it. You know, it'll turn into a yes sir type of technology. I think what we really need is to bring the cost down so it turns into more like a Walkman type of technology.
Okay, I'm gonna take. Actually, I got two guys here who've been holding their hands up a while. I'm gonna take this guy first. Can you show us any of the effects real quick, or some of the things you were speaking about earlier?
I guess if there's something IR, it's quite similar. The other, it's a different ITAP that I normally wear for IR, and that particular ITAP that sees in the IR is very much. A kind of ITAP that only sees black and white and doesn't have color, so that ITAP doesn't have this beautiful 24-bit color, but on the other hand, it has that infrared, and I guess things like camcorder remotes, I'm just looking to see if I've got one here, but maybe what I should do really is get the other get the other ITAP on at some point in time.
We'd love to have you back next year and show us what you're up to. So that would be a great opportunity for you to do that. Let me take another question here. You, sir.
Are you worried about this technology being used for what he's fighting against?
He's already addressed that. I want somebody else. You.
Does he plan to include night vision or thermal imaging?
He's already addressed that. Somebody else. You.
Does he see any practical applications of technology?
He's already addressed that. Somebody else. How about, I got a question for you, Professor. I think I'm entitled to one since I've been announcing here. What inspired you to get involved in this type of thing? What were your what kind of background did you have in this? Why did you do this in the first place?
Well, I guess my interest was in creating personal space. I was a little bit disturbed by the way technology was going, and I didn't really like what I saw in terms of technology. And I decided, I guess, to create my own personal space. And the other motivation was kind of photographic in nature. I've always been fascinated by light and photography, and I wanted to become a camera, sort of being a camera as a very existential principle of self-determination and mastery over one's own destiny. So it's kind of a long long story that I'll have to write one day.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been very fun. We've got a full house here. Give him a hand. That just kicked ass, I've got to say. Right on. Thanks a lot.
Hi, guys.